You're here on Sunday Arts Magazine, Joy 94.9. Now, our next guest in the studio is Rebecca Coates, who is the director of Shepparton Museum. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hello. Lovely to be here.
Thank you. Now, you've got you're here to talk, obviously, about an exhibition that is on at the Shepparton Museum. But yep. Before we start that, Rebecca, we'd just like to get a bit of background and you know, as to what your involvement in the arts to date have been and how you got your interest, basically, in that. Now, so you've been, obviously, a curator previously.
I have.
I noticed you've actually also, I think, lectured at Melbourne University as well.
Yeah, I've got a pretty, relatively unconventional.
Okay,
I was one of the really bad art students that spent a lot of time with all my friends going to very good parties and perhaps did a little less work. This is something I don't normally share.
Well, especially with your daughter who
is doing VCE this year. Yeah, yes. And the second one is second year uni. So she knows now that I was perhaps not the best student. It's not the model that as a mother I would hope that she takes. But this is going to date me too, the year of, you know, free education. So the years of free education. So we could, you know, everyone worked part time. We all worked hard, played hard.
But you're originally
I'm
from
Melbourne.
A country girl, though.
So I grew up, my grandparents were from the country. So we always did the backwards and forwards to the country. And I spent a lot of time listening to ABC radio and guessing what musical pieces were on. So
right, okay. So yeah, a love of music.
Yeah, love of music and, you know, arts, literature. You know, a great friend of my grandmother's was a poet. So, you know, that idea of time away and quiet time, really useful quiet time, and a lot of writers talking as well, was something that I grew up with. And I just thought it was normal. You know, that's, you don't realise what's normal or what's normal until you've got anything else to sort of judge it against.
Yeah. So so why did you choose to go to art school when you left school?
Well, I mean, it's really interesting, that question of do you choose or does something choose you? I had never thought about doing anything else. I looked at architecture at RMIT at that stage.
Hard work?
Well, no, it was architecture, RMIT, and it wasn't even any other architecture schools, art school. And at that stage, I had friends at VCA and RMIT. I don't know why I didn't think of Paran at that point, because that was an amazing department.
Yeah.
And subsequently, but, you know, probably that would have been a great one. Or arts at Melbourne. So I was quite specific even, you know. And I wanted something that was would sort of, you know, extend your mind. I was a voracious reader. I am a voracious reader. So that sort of reading, writing, analysis, talking, you know. And actually, it's quite interesting. I did get to arts at Melbourne in the 1980s, and it did feel like home. Of course, I missed art practice. I missed the studio experience. So quietly snuck off and went to Swinburne, that had this amazing film school at that stage and graphic design, and, you know, and didn't tell anyone. So I sort of moonlit, you know, I did that at night, and then I went and I was a preppy art student during the day. So schizophrenic, you know,
there's
always a bit of that. Yeah, there's always a bit of that.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
And so what did you do when you finished?
So at that stage, curators were really my perception as a very probably outspoken 18, 20-year-old, you know, at that stage was curators really, the model was the major state institutions. It was very scholastic, scholarly based. So you did your art history, you did your master's, you did your PhD. And the perception of a curator was a person who sat in their little room on their own doing worthy research. No way, not for me. Got four jobs, you know, so I was, you know, waitress here and did this here and worked at George's, you know.
Story for
accessories,
another time.
Accessories, hands, gloves.
Whoa,
that's another story. I can do very good attitude.
Yeah.
And so I did that, bought my one-way ticket and went to London. So I just thought you've got to work, you've got to learn on the job. The place that was really happening at that stage was London. They just had, it's just an explosion of possibilities of working with artists, making shows, learning my mistakes, you know, and there was an incredibly vibrant, quite socially active grassroots as well as everything else. Moved to Brixton, you know, say no more, you know. So it was sort of, London was the place to be. And, you know, when I got to the National Gallery in London, there were all these works on the wall that I'd only ever seen in black and white slides. Mm. I mean, this is quite a shock. Mm. So it was just like the world was opening up. And
was that London in the 80s, wasn't it?
It was London in the 80s.
Okay, that would have been an experience in itself.
It was a real experience. And I, you know, you had no money. You had to make your own luck. So there no credit cards. We had no mobile phones. Mm. It was, you know, and if I ever did ring back, Mum would say, quick, hop off the phone. It's too expensive, you know. So you were on your own. And the thing that I think a lot of Australians had at that stage was a bit of attitude, and we'll make it work. Somehow we'll make it work. And that is an amazing, so that sort of confidence to do that was actually better education than anything else at that stage.
Of course it is. So what did you end up doing?
So I studied at the Victoria and Albert Museum for a year, and that was amazing,
yeah.
You know, just extraordinary. And again, I kept saying, but I'm interested in working with contemporary artists, and I want to work with, you know, in the contemporary art world. But that rigour and discipline and the analysis of looking and handling and working with objects in hindsight was hugely valuable training. Again, you know, I was, you know, 20s, a little fickle, so got my Eurail pass and went to Europe because, you know, again, you go into places and institutions and art museums and people and so on that you've never, ever, only ever seen in books. Mm. And after my third or fourth London winter and however good it was, then I had this fabulous job that I just finally sorted out in a commercial gallery and working in other galleries as well. I was talking to some Italian friends and I said, oh, I'm not looking forward to, you know, English winter and the Poms, which are, you know, whom I love dearly, but, you know, sometimes. So they said, well, why go back? And I said, well, why? We've got a good question. So I actually moved to Italy. And so I spent 4 years living in Italy, and they were great friends based in Naples, which I love, and it's quite anarchic and it's quite wild. I spoke to them in French because they didn't speak English and I didn't speak Italian. So I moved to Milan, lived there for 4 years, and you know, that was so I enrolled at l'Accademia dell'Arte, which is the Fine Art Academy. And again, that was that going back to making, if you're working with practicing artists, there has to be an understanding of process and thinking, creative thinking, I think. So it's this most circuitous, not what I told my master's students to do. You know, they have a real career trajectory now. And I so didn't do that. And yet everything, when you look back, sort of adds to what you're doing, you know, where you end up and what you do. So there's a bit of, what do I call it? You know, it's a slight, you help your own fate, but fate helps you a little bit too.
So you came back to Australia?
So I came back. So I sort of did three big stints overseas in the end, and they each was about sort of 4 years stints. So in my 20s, in my 30s, and then, you know, later. And each of them was quite different. So, you know, there's a sort of London and Europe first period. Yep. Then I came back here and I started working at the Australian Centre for Contemporary Art for the first time when it was in the Botanic Gardens, you know, in a little cottage. Then went back overseas again. So we had another stint after working at the NGV and doing a whole lot of other stuff. And that was a really interesting period. You know, we were based in Oxford, so I was working at the Museum of Modern Art there as a curator. And interestingly, then we used to do a lot of exhibitions, collaborations with European institutions, which I ran. So you'd curate a show and then you'd set up a collaboration and look at different parts that you might want to work with the artist to create for a particular, if it's Odense or if it's going to, you know, Finland or if it's going to Germany or going to France, and their collection or that audience, or, you know, how do you tell a slightly different part of the story? And we did a lot with regional Scotland, Ireland and regional parts of England. So we went up to Preston, and so I got to know this whole regional collection of institutions and the importance that they'd played historically, and were going through a quite renaissance around, you know, Warsaw particularly was doing really great things. Icon at that stage, Lizanne McGregor was there, who's the director of the MCA. You know, these were all the sort of connections that we're all doing really interesting things in different ways. So quite formative periods. And then I'd come back and keep working. And, you know, it's quite interesting because my colleagues would say, you know, Peter, oh, that's great, Dale, but, you know, did you go to the Gertrude show last week? You know, so there's sort of that, at that time, I think in Australia, there was a sort of interest and a bit of an envy of going and coming. And yet, you know, there was a very specific art world here that you had to be a part of to keep progressing, you know, to keep doing good things. So, you know, it's probably the same everywhere, but that was a quite particular moment.
And here you are now in regional Victoria.
Yes.
Doing what?
So three things. When I was invited to apply for the position of director, so their previous director, whom I had known.
Director of where?
Of Shepparton Art Museum.
Right.
Was going, you know, she was moving on. And, you know, I must admit, in my 20s, I think if someone had said, would you go and work in a regional gallery, in my unenlightened state, I probably would have said that was quick death. But I think things have changed amazingly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a bit sort of zeitgeist. It was the right thing at the right time. And yep. I had been working at the University of Melbourne, and I'm still a fellow there. I love what they do. And I, you know, I think it's the students, the opportunity to work with these students is just like a gift. You know, they're amazing, these kids. But nonetheless, you know, I had an increasing belief that the way to institute change was actually through art museums and galleries, through working with artists, through working with your communities, and being able to, I call it practice, hardcore practice-led research. You know, if something's not working, you change it quickly. You don't, you know, and you keep, you're looking, you're meeting people, there's a sort of dynamism, or there should be a dynamism to what you're doing. So it sort of was, that was a great opportunity, really interesting. And the added part to that was that they'd developed a business case to build a new art museum. It had been endorsed by council. And this was this incredible foundation stone to get a new $35 million project for a new art museum in regional Victoria up and happening. So that was really interesting because, you know, I think every art director would want to build a new museum. It wasn't the motivation of that. To be successful, we have to really engage the hearts and minds and people of Greater Shepparton and be somewhere that people want to come at the weekend for a visit or a weekend away, or what are we going to do? Have a nice, you know, lunch here or dinner here or stay here and go to the museum. And, you know, so it's actually thinking really differently, I think, about our relationship to Melbourne or to capital cities, to international visitors. How do they find out about SAM when they're in overseas somewhere?
Yep.
You know, so it's really changed. And I think at that moment, you know, I went to SAM, Jason Smith went to Geelong, you know, and a number of really great colleagues said, we have some very established art museums, you know, Bendigo and Ballarat. They do great things. It's Gold Rush money. There's a Gold Rush history. This is, and Geelong, to be fair, is sort of part of that nexus. But let's think about this a little differently because, you know, in Shepparton, we don't have that Gold Rush history. We've got a history, an amazing history of multiculturalism, immigration, Indigenous, you know, history and culture that is as strong and present now as it has ever been, you know, and that makes a really interesting mix. So it has to be something that is continuous and living and pretty bold. Mm. So that sort of informed my... it's also got an amazing collection. It's got... the collection focus is ceramics. Now, any of us that grew up with the whole sort of art craft and, you know... but we all do it, you know. So yep. that's a great way to create something that's quite unique.
But then you've taken a whole leap forward with this exhibition that's on.
Yes.
Which is called Soft Core.
Yes.
Which I find absolutely fascinating, especially one of the postcards that you've got. Describe it to people.
Well, so the postcard has got a picture of a little baby in one of those capsules that, you know, in the 1990s, 2000s, council used to be able to get them from council. They were the worst back-breaking pieces of design I've ever seen in my life. But here's this little baby with a little beanie, knitted beanie on. It's got a soft sort of bunny rug around its up to its neck. But when you look at the face, it looks like this wizened old creature. And
almost like E.T. in a way.
A cross between E.T. and someone said to me, I find this, I can't deal with this. And I said, the only thing I keep thinking of when I look at this image is, you know that film Benjamin Button, when he's born old and he dies a baby?
Yeah.
There's something, and the eyes, really interestingly, have got these big black-brown sort of pools and very little white. So it looks, it's really alert, this little baby. Mm. And, you know, when you're doing your next exhibition, that we sit down and I've got fabulous colleagues I work with in the sort of MarComs, marketing communications area, and we have a discussion around what image is going to be the invitation for the show. What are we going to have as the collateral? What images? What's going to be the one that draws people in? And we're doing quite a bit of work on who are our audiences and what attracts people. This is show that has been initiated by Casula Powerhouse up in Sydney, and the curator's Michael Doe. So they're doing really great stuff with contemporary audiences, but with wider appeal. And the girls came in and they said, the image that has got the most following, that people are reposting and tweeting, is this one. Because, you know, the curator came back and she said, I'd like a very beautiful little image of, you know, and I said, well, that's nice, but we need something that grabs people's attention, that gets them talking about what is sculpture, what's this idea of soft, you know, how does it relate to us, and what relationship does it have to our context? And this was the one that, you know, has been amazing.
Yeah, well, it makes you want to, you know, like, well, even if you know, a lot of people don't want to look at the image.
It's compelling. But
I
should add, it is by one of our leading Australian artists, Patricia Piccinini, who is just a master craftsperson and artist, you know, in the way that she, the dexterity that she has with materials.
Yeah.
And the uncanny, the sort of, the normal but the slightly off, I think, because, you know, that's what she's engaged with and interested in.
But then there's a cute, in another a shot I've looked at, there's a cute bunny.
There is a cute bunny, and this has a little darker side to it, I think, too. The artist is an artist called Michael Parakofa, and a number of years ago when the Melbourne Art Fair started doing big commissions, they invited Michael Parakofa to do an inflatable, to make a work. And he created this enormous inflatable oversized bunny. Now, he's a New Zealand artist, and I think anyone growing up in New Zealand and Australia can't help but be aware of the introduction of species to Australia, largely for food, you know, and for agriculture, and the damage that they've wreaked to our, you know, environment. So it's fun, it's playful. You know, we have to take his whiskers out every night and deflate him. You can't stay inflated the whole time.
Oh,
and
right.
He's huge. So he just about scrapes the top of the ceiling.
Yeah,
and we've got pretty high gallery ceilings. And you can just hear this little noise. So everyone's very aware. Anyone who's been on a magic, you know, jumping castle knows, you know, you turn that switch off and poor old bunny's down and out, you know.
So how many artists are involved?
Oh, they're about 14.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're leading Australian artists on the whole. Tony Ousler is an American artist whose work is also included. And you might have seen some of his images. He was very influential, I believe, on the show, the designer at the NGV, Gautier.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing show. And you know when you walked in and you saw all those figures with their clothes and they had projections onto their faces?
Yeah, awesome.
So Tony Ousler is the king of that.
Right.
And he does these creepy eyeballs that blink at you and so on. So that's a really aside, interesting crossover between art and fashion and art and the influence of, you know, who's picking up ideas where and what.
Yep.
And so as you're going down the stairs, out of the gallery, there's this little figure that sits on the plinth. You know, you literally put your hand down and here's this little figure with a talking face going, bop, 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 you know, like this. And it's the projection onto this little doll, you know. And, you know, kids have little stuffed toys and dolls that they, you know, what do they call them? They're comforters or, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a very simple little creature like that. But the projection of the face onto this little intimate doll is quite creepy.
Mm. So, as we were saying, it's called Softcore.
Yes.
And it's on at Shepparton.
Art Museum.
Art Museum, and it's called SAM.
So we call it SAM. And that's another thing. You know, Shepparton Art Museum sounds very proper and very formal.
But then SAM sounds really cool. And you all of a sudden you have to stop and think, oh, yeah. That's SAM, yeah.
And it takes us a bit of a person. Yep. You know, it's got a bit of an identity. Yep. And we've got, you know, we're doing a huge amount of work with various communities in Shepparton, and there's a real sense of the identity that they would like to create, this the safe space, the fun space, the engaged space. So that's why we really call it SAM. And it is an art museum, but, you know, it's SAM.
Brilliant. And it's on till the 18th of March.
It is.
And there's always something on that you can check out there anyway.
We have... from education groups to speed dating to, you know, stitch and bitch, you name it. We do everything there. And, you know, this exhibition has been a means of us doing the most fabulous programming that takes us out of the museum and invites lots of different people in.
You're a brilliant salesperson. You've won me. I'm coming to Shepparton.
Great.
Rebecca Coates, thanks so much for coming in today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And likewise. Absolutely.
You're here on Sunday Arts Magazine, Joy 94.9.